good testimony. Parks is always getting stiff, but we're going to continue to stiff them.
Yeah, I want the end up.
Yeah, right. We appreciate you Parks people,
but not enough to listen. Order.
Exactly. That's it in a nutshell.
Yeah.
How should our response be to that?
There's takers down here.
That's a tough one.
Should we say,
oh, thank you for hitting me again?
Very exciting. Treat.
Oh, what?
Thank you.
I don't
know if you make an economic argument. Or we did.
A great one.
Yeah.
If those were made.
So the first thing on the agenda is a
you're going to have one of these?
No.
I think I'll pass.
Okay.
All
right.
Saving it for a happy hour later.
Okay. Thank you for your time today. I will apply like kids fishing. I've been with them for 31 years. We have partnered with Fly Neighborhood Association for 31 years. We've also partnered with Park PUD. We understand that, and I don't want to make this comes up every once in a while, that you want to charge for parking at Klein Line Kids Fishing. We're requesting those 3 days that there is no charge for that fee. One is going to make a heck of a backup. Not everyone parks at Klein Line. We can't get them all in there. We're using the baseball fields. And on Saturdays, we're also using Chuck's parking plus their parking for their employees' parking, too. So it's not all just geared there. The kids are important. We have, out of 3,000 kids, we have 800 kids that we actually pay the whole thing for. We support them because they're not having to have $5 even. We charge nothing. We have 3,300 hot dogs that we give away to kids. We have coffee and chocolate. We have education there. We have water safety. We have stream team. We have, I got a biotinist there, and many other things for the kids to learn. So it's a learning experience. And we need help with that. Last year, to show you, there's 145 people in the community that either supported the program in cash or in time. This program is $200,000 to put on. A lot of work. For $5, kids get a rod, a reel, a shirt, kids do fish, and we clean them. They don't want their fish. We donate their fish to the state, to the share house. So we're usually giving about 400 pounds of clean fish to the share house, which is important. So nothing goes to waste. The park is identical, is sweep clean when we leave. It's cleaner than even when we get there. The Parks Department does a good job trying to have it clean for us. But on top of that, we make sure it is clean. We have enough dumpsters to put all the trash in. Unfortunately, we can't be there on Sunday when the park opens up and when people leave trash around. It's an unfortunate situation. I think, and I don't want that, in the past, we got years of times where I've got proof where Clark County Parks have waived the fee the last 3-4 years with no problem. I'm coming back and asking for your consideration. We don't want to have to get the state involved in this. We also have talked to the state about maybe opening up Battleground again, because it's been closed for fishing thing went that way. The state has already told us that they will waiver the 3 days of the fishing derby at their park out there. So we know that if we decide to expand to that, all 7 other fishing derbies that we support, there is no charging for any parking. So whatever you can do to put something in your minutes so that we will never have to keep, we have to go through this about every 7 years. I would like to have something permanently put in so we don't have to go, because I know the Parks Department's great and they're great at supporting us. We try to support the Parks Department. We work with the streaming team. We help Bruce Barley try in the Parks Department because they're so busy. They give us the permission to do it to help kill the algae. And I know the Parks Department's working and trying to get some more carp in there. They clean it up. We went out and bought our own nets last year, finally, to keep the fish in. The old nets that Park P&D had, the Game and Wildlife were using, was kind of dying. Took me 2 years to get from 41,000 down to 9,000. So we've worked on it, and it's all important. Does anyone have any questions about the program that we've put on?
Did you say you had 1,000 kids?
3,100 kids.
3,100.
And out of that 3,100 kids, 3 years ago we added the special needs kids. And that's why we have Friday and Saturday.
Now how many of those kids are special needs?
Huh?
How many of those kids are special needs?
1,000.
1,000?
Our goal was 1,000. We got till 800 last year. I made some more contacts for this year, some more groups where we can kind of reach out to more of them. We may go over 1,000, I don't know. The shirt and rod reel and bait cost $25 per child. So
I have to say, I think that that is one of the most phenomenal programs that is here, because my grandchildren never get a chance to go fishing, and they love it. So I think every child is special when it comes to that.
It's the largest one in the state of Washington.
So we thank you for your service on that.
Thanks. It's the largest one in the state of Washington. We may have to go to 4 days if the fishing age changes. There's some talk about Olympia changing the fishing license age to age 18. If that happens, right now it's age 14. That happens, we're going to have to have another day, for at least for another 1,000 kids. And that means we're going to buy more rod reels. So, yes.
What if we asked if you would go to the county council and ask them to budget in their budget what we would charge, rather than us saying we can waive that because we're getting hit so hard with every program there is, ask them to fund that for you out of their funds.
Well,
and we'll go with you.
Right now, the commissioners over the years, and I've met commissioners meetings, I've talked to the commissioners to be part of this. They have never come out and helped us at all.
Do you think it's time, maybe?
They've done no funding.
Do you think it's time?
The funding for the parks is done by our taxes that we pay on our home. Plus, yes, it is.
Well, the maintenance is for the the parks, but not the regional parks.
The money you're trying to collect, is that to help maintenance?
You don't want to go to the county commissioners with us to get this funding.
Okay.
Is that right?
Well, we've tried in the past, but we've been turned down. In the last 10 years, I've talked to commissioners. I can't even get the commissioners to come out and see what's going on in their community and what their kids are about. So if someone's got a good pull with the commissioners to get them to kick them up, what do you think you're going to lose?
Yeah, I think it's probably a good issue to approach on. Yeah.
Well,
you have a valid point, and I think it needs consideration. So thank you for sharing it.
Okay. No other questions?
Thank you.
Thanks.
And I just wanted to let you know that we are there. And our special day is the special needs kids. Because those kids come in and they go, gee, we cannot do this because we have impairments or a handicap or a disability. And then they start to socialize when they never been before. Then they start learning. And all of a sudden they're empowered because they have that pitch. And one of my favorite ones was this one little kid that cannot really express himself, but he would draw wonderful pictures. And I go, wow, you've got two fish. He says, yes. And I said, well, which one is your favorite? So he went to this tiny little one. And I go, well, then you also have a big one. He says, oh, well, that one my mom helped me get. So he was very extremely proud of it. we always, always support that event. Now, that letter that I'm giving to you is a letter that we gave to Bill, because we know that the commissioners are going to revisit the parking fee issue. Right now, it's waived, which is one of the worst of Milky's efforts in the past. However, we do know that there is a possibility that that's going to happen. And definitely that we would like for you, because, you know, this is something that has to come to them from you as well, because you will have to say, okay, we support this or we don't. And of course, Bill is in a very hard, tough position. So if you guys would support this and empower the staff to include that as part of their testimony, to maybe exclude those bona fide 501c3s that are there for the public good, not private profit. They're there for educational purposes, not for selling. And that they're there to empower these kids to be part of our community, as well as to be part of the a club, let's say, that is very, very engaged in outdoor sports, as well as fishing, because then they become good stewards of their parks, then they become good stewards of the environment, and they understand what the cycle of the fish and other things are, and can participate in for the rest of their lives, because they will be the leaders. And we want to make sure that those leaders are recognized now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do you mind if I make a quick comment on that? So we did some research, and looking back, we actually waived those fees for the years 2011, 12, and 13, and then of course the fees were removed, parking fees we're talking about. And so we do have a decision package going forward. It's a budget decision package to have those parking fees reestablished. And so if that gets approved on December 6th, then those parking fees will come back to us beginning in 2017 once we get the program established again. And so the one thing that Eric is here, what we have to take a look at is fee waivers and where we make those waivers. What is the criteria? So we can't waive all the nonprofits out there, because there's so many of them that want, you know, that want that. So we have to, you know, define who gets it, who doesn't. And right now we're trying to target kids. You know, if there's something that really evolves around kids, that might be a criteria that we're looking for.
Can I, as a part of the park rental program, mm-hmm. is there a way to allow X number of parking spaces for rentals? So for example, if someone's renting a shelter at Kleinline, as a part of their rental, they get a dozen parking passes or whatever for their rental at the shelter at Kleinline. So when an individual rents Kleinline as a whole park, then the parking is part of their rental. Is that
So it'd be added to the fee.
Instead of additive expense, it's part of the rental. Yeah. So it's not a, gee, we rented your place and now you're charging us for parking rent kind of thing.
And think about the logistics of making that happen.
I wonder,
you almost have to have like spots, you know.
Yeah. Or tickets. Reserve. You know, here's 12 tickets. If they're available parking, then you get 12. I don't know. Just a thought. And then another thought could be around a quid pro quo metrics. So if an organization comes to you and says, I want to rent this, but I don't want to pay your this fee or that fee, there may be some quid pro quo that you can identify. We do this with the Durst Theater, with Clark College, who they provide our students tickets to their performances, and in exchange, we reduce the cost of the renting of the Durst by the cost of the tickets to the students that attend. So there's some mutual benefit, so I wonder if there's some ways to come up with documented mutual benefit instead of a gift of public funds. That's really the issue that you're probably trying to avoid here, is you don't want to give public funds in a way that is inequitable to other organizations or individuals asking for the same type of waiver.
Mm-hmm. I think in January, when we reconvene again, we will know whether the parking fees are actually reestablished. We will actually also know on a separate decision package if our rental rates are going to go up. That's That was another separate package. And I think what we need to do as a group, our Parks Advisory Board, sit down and actually think about what's going to work, what's not going to work going forward. Right now, the waivers have to be approved by the board. And so we need to establish who can provide those waivers in the future, whether it goes back to the board again, it should be Mark McCulley as county manager, or myself as the Parks manager. So there's a lot of things to work out. So it's been that whole program's been dead for about 3 years now. So
so the waivers in the past went back to the board?
We always ask the board if those
that's
waivers
good to know.
Seen a good use of their time, but should be made at a lower level.
Yeah. What do you think about what? There's 200 parking spots there, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That's why it goes back and forth. That's a substantial either waiver that goes, you know, you've got to have some support for that kind of a waiver.
Right.
So that they don't come to you at the end of the year and go, Bill, how come you gave? You know,
you gave all this money away. Yes.
Or you gave it for this but not for that, and did you know that? Need support.
Yeah, that'll be exciting in January.
I think they have to be held accountable as we do. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hey, Eric, how many waivers did we issue last year? Do you know?
A handful.
Probably less than five.
If you're talking about, for example, the Honor of the Goddess at Vancouver Lake, if you were to waive the fees that you're talking about for a 3 or 4 day event, you're probably talking about $7,500 per weekend. So, you want to be thoughtful and considerate about all the criteria that goes into making that decision, because you are talking about real dollars. Whether or not you agree with the philosophy to charge those fees, the fact of the matter is, if you're charging them, there's a bottom line impact there, and an administrative cost to you, because we'll still have staff out in the parks making sure that the people who are part of that event are not paying those fees. We want to be sure that they're getting that service. So.
So let's reconvene in January and talk about this to find out what the outcome's going to be. Sound good?
Sounds good. So back on track to the agenda. Roll call. Start over with Jeremy this time.
Jeremy Hughes, question is up.
Tim Willett, Parks Foundation.
Dave Weston, PAP.
Jay Chester, PAP.
Jennifer Halligan, Hoover Public Schools.
Barbara Anderson,
yeah. Kelsey Potter, PAB.
Kelly Putney, PAD.
Lori Lebowski, Clark County Community Planning.
Lauren Hilty, Park Staff.
Clark County, Bill Beerke, Clark County Parks.
Melania.
Yeah.
Introductions.
Melania Al, the Light and Angler Association Press.
Jaffe.
Pilot Kids Fishing, not a problem.
Eric Christensen, Clark County Parks.
Amanda Bycorn, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney.
Thank you. We have a minute to review and adopt the minutes from our last meeting. Second.
I'll second it.
Okay, it's moved and seconded to accept the minutes as presented. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Well, the first thing we've got on our agenda, since we will not be holding a December meeting, this is a combined November-December meeting, is elections. And as you're all aware, John and I have said that we're here to support the team, but we feel new leadership is always a good idea. So we'll open the floor to nominations, knowing that if you nominate someone, that someone must accept the nomination. You don't get it, just be a stuckie. So we have three positions. And I guess the decision is whether we go...
I thought we had four.
No, we've got chair,
A whip.
Co-chair, and a whip.
I'm serious.
In the ordinance, I don't
recall
it.
In this commission. Okay. keep going.
I've never heard of that.
Okay.
I'd have to go back and look. Okay, we have three positions that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Your chair and vice chair, or as we've run up to this point, as co-chairs and a secretary. So, floor is open to nominations for chair or co-chair. You can self-nominate as well. I nominate Kelly Putney, since I don't hear anybody else speaking up. Would you accept that nomination, Kelly?
What are you nominating me to?
For chair or co-chair.
Co-chair, maybe.
You would accept co-chair. Okay. And somebody want to speak up that would like to be a co-chair with Kelly?
Would you, Barbara?
I told Bill I would step up if no one else would take it, but I honest to God feel that a change in vision of leadership is key. So if no one else will take it, I would, but I think that there are others in this room that might be willing. Jay, would you?
I was going to say I'd be willing to co-chair with Kelly.
All right.
I do have a caveat of taking on the chair role, and that is that Barbara would be the whip of the subcommittees. I know that that's a new position, but I have a real understanding of past times of subcommittees, and they never seem to get to the meetings and stuff. So you got to have somebody to prod on that issue. And if we're going to do subcommittees, as of which we've decided we're going to, we need somebody to push them. And I don't think the chair co-chairs can do that. So I think Barbara should be nominated as the whip, and she should be attending our agenda meetings as well. That's a motion.
Are you saying there's no rest for the wicked? if that's what will keep you on board, I would be happy to do that.
Thank you.
How's that? I'm not
happy. Well, we could probably get a support of the...
Can I interject something and say, so can we talk about the subcommittees? Because I've been to like four or five meetings, and every time no one has ever mm-hmm. brought anything from the subcommittees. So,
that's not
except
quite
you. Right. Except you.
Well, Chris Fry had one report. He's not here today. They have not gotten as active as they need to be, and yes, we do need to focus on it.
And so, my 10 years of being with commissions, yeah. I've seen where it tends to get that way. So that's yeah. why I'm proposing
and
this position.
I agree with you that they can tend to be put on the back burner and not leveraged the way that they should. So that's why I agreed to do what you said.
Okay.
So, but yes, it's a discussion. Could we do it another day? Because we're running behind.
Yeah.
Because we're running really behind.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Looking for a nomination for secretary so we can do it all in one bag if we can. You're loving it? Okay. Any other nominations before I close nominations? Okay, nominations are closed. We have, I guess since there's one of each, is okay. We've got Kelly and Jay as co-chairs. Dave as secretary, and I guess I'm some new position called up with. I don't know. That makes me sound like I'm a little abusive.
If you have to be, that's what it takes sometimes.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
If we had contested things, I'd make you write them down. I just want to say that. Any opposed? Okay, we have new leadership. Thank you very much for stepping up.
And it will
and
be under.
I might call on you to assist the whip.
Yes, I would be more than happy to do
that.
What about subcommittee chairperson instead of whip?
I don't care what it's called. It just needs to be.
I think
it's for. They have a
it's
whip
a
in the
chair.
In
yeah,
the
it's
Congress and.
Okay, moving right along. Moving right along. Speaking of.
But,
subcommittees. Yeah. The all-cap meeting that took place month. And I have to say, I was a little bit disappointed that we didn't get more movement and action out of it, because I really wanted that. But in reality, I'm very pleased with the fact that we had representation from the largest portion of the county. The two Jeffs that didn't show up from Le Center and Yacolt actually had contacted me that day and had planned on being there, and we would have had all eight jurisdictions. So I was pleased with that. But something came up that I think that we can still do more on. And that is, if you've all took a moment to review the Blue Ribbon Commission report that we discussed there, I know that several of you weren't able to make it there, but I did provide that to you. And one thing that just totally is without question is that that report, in its essence, hasn't changed. And speaking about subcommittees making recommendations and nothing getting done, there's a big one. I believe that there is more work that could be done to force to support implementation of many of the recommendations of that plan. And that what we really need to do is maybe go back and reinvigorate or revalidate that and ask the commissioners to do that.
Well, as you know, in the discussion at our table on that evening, Mark Bolt did agree to pursue that, and he has since that time met with Tim Leavitt, and there is a desire to appoint at that level a review of the Blue Ribbon Committee. Now, if they continue to work towards that, I know Mark's out there in the community asking people what they think about the idea of him doing that. And Tim Leavitt, of course, he's in his final year, so whether he takes the initiative to move it forward, but Roy is pushing him hard on that. So I think there's a possibility. Our role in that would be just to keep pushing them in the WIP approach and see how it goes. But if to be effective, it's got to be only, we need to be there at the table, but we don't need to direct it. I think it needs to be directed by a group of people that both the mayor and the chair of the county board are going to appoint. And we need to continue to push them on that.
Yeah, it gives validity. Do you feel that, because you've got more information than I do at this time on that, do you think it would behoove us for PAB to send a letter of support or requesting them to take that action to validate it?
I think it would behoove us to send a letter to both Tim Leavitt and Mark saying that in our discussions of that meeting, we were encouraged and hoped that that could happen, and say we would like to somehow help steer that to reality.
Okay. Do you want to make that a motion?
I'll make it a motion. I just said it, so.
Okay.
I don't want to repeat it.
Okay. Did you capture it? Yeah.
I'll have to go back and say that.
Okay.
We'll just ask.
Is there a second to that?
As a reason. Oh, go ahead.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded that PAB send a memo of support to Tim Leavitt and BOCC to encourage the
revisiting of the
Blue Ribbon
Committee
Commission report.
Of the committee?
No.
The Blue Ribbon Commission report.
The report itself.
Okay.
New members. And that might behoove us to have this commission and the city commission
send
do that
letters.
Together. No, joint letter.
It'll take some education on the cities.
What's that?
It'll take a little education with the cities, parks, board.
Well, Roy's still there, and he's the one
Roy
that we want.
Roy's and Sybil.
He's pushing it, so his influence from that side.
Haven't been introduced to the ribbon.
Well, what's his name? The chair has.
Chris. And Sybil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
But the other four.
Yeah. Right. But the three of them, I mean, it'd be up to them to pursue it. So, but we have Roy, who was part of the major work on that. So that would be good.
Yeah.
And he was in that conversation that night.
Absolutely. I just know that it seems a shame that all that work transpired and then has sat there gathering dust.
Right.
All in favor? Any opposed? Good. I think that's a good next step.
So if I could add that when we met on Wednesday, Chris and Sybil talked to the group about the success of the event and said you did an amazing job. I thought you were dynamic. I just thought, wow, that guy's awesome. And
he's a cook too.
And one key piece that resonated well with was the idea around maybe getting together in a broader sense the purchasing power, that concept around all of the parks, whether it be in we have these projects coming out this year and getting one collective bid, or even when this goes into a collaborative around different equipment that's been purchased and things like that. So that was something that really resonated with the both of them, and so they brought that up and talked about it.
That was one of the suggestions that
we used to do that regularly with the school district on bids, public bid for playground equipment and stuff.
Yeah, we're connected, so we can interlocal those kinds of things.
Yeah.
We be between jurisdictions as well.
Yeah, it really works well.
Yeah, and the event will be repeated first quarter of 2017. Ridgefield will be hosting it.
Great. Chris was looking forward to attending.
Yeah. I think it's going to gather momentum and keep moving. That's what I said. Even though we didn't take a specific action, we're going to do this. I think the fact that we made forward progress and that the ball is continuing to roll, you know what that happens with that? Gathers momentum as it moves forward. So that's exciting. 3 years it's taken to get there, but the ball is finally rolling.
I think our next OPAD meeting is scheduled for spring of next year, and Richfield's going to host it.
Yeah, that's what I was just saying. Right. Yeah.
And so maybe it's something we could talk about too.
Yeah.
And then, of course, with this Blue Ribbon Commission. I guess the question is, do we want the two entities, Clark County and Vancouver, to try to spread that out to the mayors of the other cities as well over time, or is it we're going to try to just have the two entities, you know?
I think that'll be Mark and Tim's choice to pursue it.
Very good.
Yeah, peer-to-peer.
Just have the officials come to our OPAT meetings like that.
Yeah, that was nice.
Yes.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, you're on deck for the Lewis and Clark Trail, speaking of
coming
together and partnering with other groups.
Yeah, so in our June Trail Summit, we had a lot of different entities come to this and attend. It was really well attended, and including Dan Miller of the National Park Service. And we actually declared the Lewis and Clark Trail as a project for the Intertwine. And with that, we gave a presentation on that, the 47-mile-long trail, and everybody seemed to be very well engaged with it, and to the point where we actually got, I don't know, probably a good dozen support letters from these different entities. And so we applied for a grant through the National Park Service for a technical service grant, and we were awarded that in October.
Yay.
And so we've got a minimum of 1 year, and Dan said actually up to 2 years of technical service from the National Park Service if we wanted to get this thing kickstarted. And so he's asking for us to bring back another Trail Summit meeting. He was kind of hoping for sometime in December, so I called a couple of the other parks directors and they said, boy, this is really tough, we got a lot of things going on. So I got back to Dan and he wants me to try to schedule something for within the first 2 weeks of January. And so I'm going to do that. So you're going to see a email with a bunch of people on it coming out. You'll all be invited as well. And we'll probably post it right here again. So I would assume that we'll try to get about 70, 80 people to come to this. And the idea is to get this thing kickstarted. And I really want to get Vancouver engaged on this project. So I've been
City of Vancouver?
City of Vancouver.
I've got an in for you, maybe.
Do you?
If you like the idea. At the last at the last meeting, there was a neighborhood community that came off on it's on the waterfront. I can't really tell, but it appears that maybe this trail goes through their development or along the beachfront.
Mm-hmm.
At 164th.
Okay.
There's apparently a lot of challenges happening with that park there. It started out as a Clark County park, and there was an agreement between Clark County and the developer.
Right.
It was annexed into the city. The city is didn't know yet, hadn't seen some of the documents that they brought forward to us. But this neighborhood is asking for the city to help step up to do something around the sort of loitering and things and such that are happening in that park, which is not yet really a developed piece. And if it's part of this trail,
mm-hmm.
they'd be in like you wouldn't believe, and they would start rocking on the solutions. But I don't know if that's the section you want to start with or what have you, but it's an idea around they're going to be needing to
that's good to know.
Look at it. And this is the first that Julie had really heard of anything going strange down that. It's the first time they've come to us. So
there's actually been some site plan work done along the whole Evergreen Highway stretch already.
A lot of work.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so I was talking to Ryan Weston, who now works for Berger Avon, and mm-hmm. he's willing to come to the summit and provide the information that he worked on back when he was with Vancouver Park Park. So.
Cool.
Yeah, so maybe.
There's a lot of pieces. You know, Kelly's been very instrumental in creating a lot of that trail system. And so there's a lot of pieces all the way from Washougal to Richfield that are already in place. It's a matter of connecting them all. So. Mm-hmm.
I will say the low-hanging fruit has already been picked.
Yes. So it's not without challenges. It's about that.
We got some challenges.
We should do. So you'll be expecting an email from me and sometime this month or early December for a January meeting. Okay?
Great.
Right. Moving this thing forward.
So what neighborhood is that? I'm just curious.
It's on the waterfront. If you were to take 164th Street exit from 14 and take a right.
Is it Steamboat Landing?
Mm-mm. No, it's
there's a dead end right there. And then
we have a little piece of property there. There was a we had a design and money to build a cul-de-sac in there.
Right, they talked about the cul-de-sac.
And that we had to give the money back because we never got it done. And DeCanna's house is right next to it there.
So this neighborhood is under the impression that the developer has gone ahead and made their contributions way back when, and they have easements on their property, but that the city now hasn't yet fulfilled the county, city, the agreement that was passed through when they annexed.
One or two lots that were in there, and I used to live right up 164th, but one or two lots there along the waterfront, they're being developed now, so that might be why there's all of a sudden this interest.
Probably that, right. Yeah.
I think it's end of the low tide, and there's been a significant amount of homeless population, and there's a lot of...
there's a ton up in the... I forget what that park is.
It runs the...
Kelly Point. Wentler?
The beach.
Kelly Point.
Whitman Beach, what was it?
Oh, Wentler.
Wentler Park.
That's lower. That's
downriver.
Anyway, Julie might be highly engaged in working.
Yeah, sure. You can maybe track down from the attendance last time who they were.
Oh, I have them all. There's 150 people that Kelly Cox, I think she's the realtor.
She came in. So you got specifics.
Well, we got the specifics.
Cool.
All right.
Julie's got it all now.
She does.
It sounds okay. Good.
All right.
She has the developer agreement. She has. They brought back.
She does. Excellent.
Okay.
Well, that's exciting, Bill.
Yes, it is. That's a bright spot.
So, you got a bright spot.
All right, with a dark cloud.
No, don't dive with the dark cloud.
Yeah, now we're going to gully.
Now you can give us the PIP update.
First of all, I think Destiny and Barbara and Milana for giving some great presentations last night. And very compelling and right on target. And I was really, really proud of all three of you for standing up and speaking on behalf of Parks and the Parks Advisory Board. So thank you so much. That said, go ahead, Lori.
You tell him.
Well, let me go back. So we had a work session with the board on November 3rd. Is it November 3rd?
Yes,
somewhere in there.
Yeah, somewhere in there. November 3rd on revising the park impact fees.
Didn't
really get a lot of direction from them at that work session, but it was just to give them an update on what we're doing. And we had a hearing with the Planning Commission last night. In your packets, you have alternatives to what was adopted. And the Planning Commission, by a vote of 5-0, voted to go with the 20% increase a year over the 5 years. So the Development Engineering Advisory Board and Building Industry Association provided a lot of comments on TIF, and that's the approach they want to take. They also would like parks to, in their calculation for level of service, include private parks, which are issues. There are issues with that.
We can't even go there.
How could we do that? I didn't mean to open it. Yeah. Discussion. Sorry.
Rhetorical question.
Well, didn't Christine Cook say you can't?
Right. She's saying you can't because of your capital facilities plan under the RCW.
Mm-hmm.
The inventory is land that's owned by the county.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which maybe that's good now.
Schools did come up, and I mean, you have cooperation right now with the schools, but the land is county land that's by the schools.
We have both scenarios. We've got two schools, Gibson and Geyser. We have park components on school land. We have three parks, one already built, Eisenhower, where we have parkland that abuts school land. And we've got a new park being built that abuts school land, which is Sorensen. And then we also have Sunset Elementary, which abuts school land. Sorensen Park, which abuts Sunset Elementary. So you have parkland right next to school land. And so essentially what the way they're set up is you have two different playgrounds, you know, because the kids have their own playground at school. You have a playground that's separate for the public's use and the walkway and stuff. So there's, I talked to Jennifer the other day on the telephone and asked her about the future of partnering with school properties, you know, in the kind of fashion that we're talking about, having county property next to school property. And yeah, absolutely. As far as counting the asset inventory of school property towards the county's parkland, I don't know. It's restricted during the day,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it's only just the only times that you can use it. So, and there's probably going to be some restrictions as to, you know, organized sports and stuff out there. So realistically, you know, there's some things to work out there. But having property next to school property, that works. So
I think logistically, even as a neighborhood, before I was on PAP, when we were looking at park needs in Park District 10, I mean, and we looked very clearly, and you saw when we did the presentation there, that we said, kids over here, go over here to Salmon Creek Elementary and play. So they're kind of got their needs met. And the ones over here go to Chinook School and play. And the kids over here go to H.B. Fuller. But you've got this whole area, and we've looked at that, Gail, that whole area north, where those kids had no place to go and play. So we did leverage, even though the schools weren't in the inventory, we did look at that they were kind of meeting the needs. But like Kelsey said,
you're still shortchanging people who don't have school-age kids.
Even
if you're accounting the school.
Well, sure, but yeah, I mean, you exactly. take your twins there after school to play. I know I did with the twins before.
Yeah, but in fall, it's dark by the time they get there after nap.
Exactly.
It's,
so it really isn't logical
you can't count
to include it.
Yeah.
As an inventory. It just doesn't make sense. You know, logically, yeah, we leverage it and we use it as community members that live near our park. You're lucky. If you're not near a park and you're near a school, you'll go use what's there.
Mm-hmm. When it's available.
And, you know, it's the same as the logic. I mean, trying to put these neighborhood parks that are built by builders. I mean, if you take a look at them, what amenities are truly in them that we would classify? You brought up a real good point on that, Bill. that there needs to be some standards set if you're going to include it. Mm-hmm. You know, not only is it open to the general public, but that it actually has something there the general public wants to play with.
Yeah.
It can't be in a swale.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it can. How clever. What a great idea.
Yes, here, I want to give you this wetland here.
There's one right by my neighborhood. Yeah. Old Red Barn farm property. They built their little park
to get it when it rains
this size and yeah. Swim.
So
there's a tiny playground. It's like
there's some defensism that we need to really get some artifacts and data around.
I did get a copy. Ridgefield is proposing some code language for a PIF credit, but it's things that it's going to include things such as the land has to be a certain size. It has to be in the park CFP. It has to be either accessing a major road or it's bordering a neighboring property. So it's not in the center of a neighborhood. So it's on the CFP. So it's a certain size. That sort of, and it hasn't been adopted yet.
Uh-huh.
I want to say that we have time as a major limiting factor. So the alternatives that we presented to, that we are going to present to the board, these are things they can do to adopt to avoid the 80% increase going into effect, which I believe is what they want.
Yeah.
But for them to go with the 2020, I mean, that was the worst case scenario. Surely there were some things in the middle that
there
might
were.
Have been a little more palatable to everybody.
The 2020 moves the needle.
It
so I want to be some a positive thinking here. It starts to move the needle. And I know there has been discussion around then.
You wouldn't take that to the school district.
It is not a good solution. No.
Okay.
It starts to move the needle, which the parks, the school's needle, we go in and ask every couple of years. The park, we haven't been able to do that. It's been years since we've gone there, so there's this huge hike, which is
And it
feels terrible.
That hike is going to get higher. Yeah.
And the hike's going to keep getting higher. So if we can, because I'm not going to change their mind. So look at it in a way that is at least the needle's moving, and at the end of the needle, there's maybe something that recalculates. You were talking about a factor that might keep it current every year instead of having that happen, and then
it's still.
But I do think that there are some things that we can say. I'm not putting up.
It's still
yes.
In.
I
totally
that's
still in.
20%, because there are some misconceptions that I think we need to clarify.
Yes.
First of all, this whole idea that the standards. Why are the standards the way they are? We had a huge discussion on that as we did the comp plan. I'm trying to dig out the details on that because the questions they asked didn't have the facts and data to respond. But we need to clarify that we are not asking for some, silver and gold type park system.
Right.
If we're going in at the brass and leather.
So Bill and Lori,
it's gotta be minimum criteria.
You think if they're still, like I know people, people who will call and who will write and who will email. Do you think there's still a chance if there's a lot of public push and a lot of public opinion that the counselors may pick something other than the 20 over 5. Like, is there still a shot where I should get people, because I can get people fired up to write letters and stuff and email and call.
Yeah.
Is there a chance and should I put some effort into that?
I think there's always a chance until the final decision's made.
Yeah.
Okay.
Until the final decision's made. I was ready to give up when I went home last night. I was just.
I know.
But
I'm not.
Then I bounced back and I thought, can't give up because I think that it's. The decision was driven by, I think we can clarify, that here's what the standards are.
Yeah.
Here's where we're actually at in the standards. I don't think that was understood. It certainly seemed like we were already at that.
Well, I said we're
60%.
A D and we're going to be an F.
Yeah.
I mean, like that.
Yeah. And, yeah. But I don't think that message was heard by either you stating it or I stating it.
Yeah.
Well, so facts and data, and I was looking for that map that Gene gave us. Do you remember it, where it showed each PIF district of what was
the
60% standard and where we were at in it?
Yeah.
I mean, the closest one to even meeting standards was over here in our park base area.
But that also comes with a lot of lobbying from the
community. I know, a lot of pushing and going on it. So,
well, I just want to add about the level of service standard, and Kelly's chime in here, but that's been the standard when it was combined with City of Vancouver, and my understanding is the City of Vancouver Park standard is remains 6 acres per 1,000 population.
Do you know what Seattle's is? 10.
Yeah.
Well, I believe it.
Yeah.
On top of the level of service, it's our performance to level of service. Yeah. That's the right. big thing that we tried to explain last night.
So
of the 6 acres per 1,000, you know, we're at 67% performance to standard for acquisition. We're at 42% performance to standard for development. So we're, you know, we've got a ways to go. Just
we've
to
got a ways to
service.
Go, yeah.
Well, and I think what's going to happen is if we don't do that, I'm not saying it's got to be the 80, but it can't be the 20 because land is not going to be available in 5 years.
Correct.
So there's got to be the big increase for like the first year, and then maybe we
at
can
least 50.
At least 50 to keep us viable. Because if it doesn't happen, there's not going to be land in 5 years when there is money in the PIP fees.
Right.
We'll have all that, and we'll go into concurrency, and we'll be. It doesn't matter. It's not going to matter in 5 years if there's no available pieces of land to buy.
I do believe that the county and staff should relook at credits, because I've worked with several developers that do large enough developers that they can put 3 to 5 acres aside. You know, they're really up in the programming, wherever the county wants it, and provide a park, but there's zero benefit to doing that for them right now. They'll get more money per home by having it private than public, and without any credit, there's very little incentive to do it.
And I think the issue is that it's just, there has to be standards for the credit that you can't have. I mean, I've seen it in Camas where they have this lot and the hill is like this, and
it's got to be a buildable lot.
We always get the remnants.
Right.
And that doesn't work.
And it has to be big. It has to be a big enough property. I like Ridgefield's idea. It has to be on the CFP. It has to be the size of a neighborhood or community park. It has
to be public?
It has to be public access?
It has to be public.
Yes.
It really goes in. And we've done this before in the past years.
As of now, not happening.
We shut it down. The City of Vancouver shut it down as well. It was problematic. However, during the DEEB meeting, we did say, look, we're willing to explore options as long as it makes sense, as long as it meets our service levels, our standards, that is, you know, the 3 to 5 acres in size. It's got to be buildable. Can't be, you know, can't have a creek run right through the middle of it, because that means you got 200-foot setback on each side and it kills the property. And we can even actually have them build the park for us as long as it meets our specifications. You know,
and they can build it a lot cheaper than we can. So if we're gifted in place park.
The problem with that is the current code, the way the PUDs are set up, it is way, when Bill and I went through this, way more work than it's worth. And I mean, honestly, unless that changes, developers aren't going to do it.
I think the other part of it is that it's work for Bill to keep track of the PIF credits.
Yeah.
That's another issue for parks.
Right.
Yeah, we've got PIF credits that are 15, 20 years old. Some of them are like, we've only got $35 in value, but we have to keep them on record forever. And so
one thing we have to keep in mind with our standards, if we're going to look at our standards and compare them with national standards, they have to be apples to apples, not apples to oranges. So that's one of the reasons we cannot take in private property and count it. Because it wouldn't be apples to apples, it would be something else. And I don't have a problem lowering the standard, because that just makes us look bad, and if they don't believe we have any value when it comes to new jobs in the community, I mean, right now they're wanting us to be the greatest park system in the world when they want a new business in town, but they don't want to fund us. So we need to have a little bit of, so by gosh, the standards should be the standards of what we're trying to fun too. Anyway, that's my speech up.
You're right.
But again, the bottom line is timing. I just want to emphasize that if the board wants to avoid the 80% going into effect January 1st, they have to adopt on December 6th with the county budget. They have to vote on some other standard, some other phasing of the park impact fees. And that's going to be really limiting as far as coming up with some kind of standard for PIF credits or maybe even level of service. So, and I've talked with Bill about we have to change our capital facilities plan if we're going to go with another phasing for the park impact fees. I have to say another issue that's out there is that if they go with another phasing, there is the potential, as always, for appeal. So our comprehensive plan is currently being appealed by a couple of different parties, so that's another issue.
At the comprehensive, but not the parks plan, the comprehensive, full county plan.
But this is in the
right, but this is, but we have to change the capital facilities plan if we want to have different PIF rates, and that means an adopting ordinance, and that's kind of a red flag.
Yeah.
That could happen, it may not happen.
Is our capital facilities plan based on the 20% now?
No.
It's not.
They don't adopt things anymore the first of the year when it takes effect. They'll be all in.
Do they have one more work session on this?
We do. Next Wednesday, the 30th.
Yes.
No, the Wednesday after the 30th.
It's Wednesday, the 30th. It's at 11:30. It's a board work session. They wanted us to come back and give them an update on how the PC voted. So we're going to come, Bill and I are working on coming back and talking about the vote and talking about the implications to the capital facilities plan or the budget, probably not the budget.
Probably the CFP. Of course, the difference between what they supported last night, the 20%, and our original, what was adopted, the 80%, is about $6 million over a five-year period. So I'll probably have to revisit the capital facilities plan and look at those projects and circle the ones that need to get pushed into the 20-year plan, essentially.
Or dropped.
Or dropped outright. Correct.
Because the value of land is going to get to the point where we just can't afford it.
Was there any talk at the work session around the already extended delay that they're passing to be able to delay a developer 18 months?
Mulata brought that up last night in her testimony.
They had that in the back of their mind as well.
Yeah, so the Senate bill that Mulata told me was approved in 2015, wasn't acted on, but it will be effective January 1, 2017.
Correct.
So basically the PIF funds won't come in until occupancy permit, or right before occupancy permit is issued.
If they apply, though, they have to actually apply for that to happen.
So
I didn't see where there was a fee associated with that application at the county, but I didn't dig deep enough.
I think there may be a fee. Community Development Department right now is working on implementing that new law.
Okay. So the city put in a $450 fee, which is a large enough deterrent based on the interest that they would save on a new on doing it to what they would save when they pay it. And some of the developers are like, well, we appreciate that, but we save like $38 or something. But I mean, there was some study done, but that was the amount that the city had anticipated it would cost for them to track, monitor, put liens on homes, collect the funds, that kind of a thing. So
I'm gonna research the code language for that, but also I thought it was limited up to 200 lots.
There is a limit up to, but I don't know what the exact limit is, because the city adopted their own sort of limit, which was like 20 lots per developer. They went and did a different kind of lid, so I'm not sure.
I'll have to look at the state law. I thought there was some kind of limit.
Question.
And of course, with that, if they are approved and we approve it, the current fee structure, and then they don't have to pay it until 2 to 20 years down the line until the occupancy permit is issued. So that delays it could delay it by 20, but it delays it by at least 2 more years. But it will be locked into the rate that
they're only vetted. I think they're only vested for 6 years. Is that right? It's up to six. You have 10 years to spend your PIF money, but I think a developer is vested in their PIF, SIF, and TIF at the time of at the time of plat approval or at the time of site plan approval, one or the other, and then they're vested for only
six years before all the extensions. 6 years, but I was just told in a pre-op that that is changing and we won't invest it at all.
Yes.
Until we submit.
Yes, you're right. That is changing. There was some case law out of Le Center that fees don't vest.
How is a developer's...
Whatever the, when they come in, whatever the fee...
Until, well, they told us basically whole building permits and that's when we would
pay
the fees at
that time. So they're going to add the building permit, whatever is currently on the books, that's what you pay. Not a site plan approval, so you can earn your money, so you can invest what you have before the fees go up.
As of, I think, January or something
right. Like January 21st, 2017.
Do you have anything you can send me on that? Does that include schools?
I think it does include schools. I can get that information.
Yeah, I don't know if that's bad or business. I just don't know.
Benefits. Those fees keep going up.
That's right.
And they wait 6 years to build it. It's a benefit if they all drop.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm like, you can't. I don't know if that's benefit or not.
It's not a
good for you guys.
For one thing, that helps the counter staff at the county because it's just, it's very, very difficult to keep track of fees. And then you have developers, if we drop our fees, then you have developers coming back so they can get the lower fees. And it's just a whole thing. And it's, I think it's pretty unworkable.
That's interesting. Okay.
So. Just as far as timeline, so we have the work session with the board on Wednesday, November 30th. It's at 11:30. It's supposed to be just a half hour. We're just going to do a quick update on what happened with the PC and then the implications of the PC's vote. Probably talk a little bit about public comment. The other important date, this is the really important date, is Tuesday, December 6th. That is when we're going to go to hearing with the board. That hearing is at night, I believe it's at 6 o'clock. And that's the same time as our budget hearing. And because this is an out of cycle comprehensive plan amendment, it has to be adopted at the same, has to be voted on at the same hearing as the budget hearing.
What date did you say that was?
December 6th.
Tuesday,
December 6th.
6th, then.
That's it. 6 o'clock.
So it's this board, this
yes.
Council. Yeah.
This council.
We also have an advocate in this.
And
have an interest in the budget itself because we have several decision packages, mm-hmm. That should be hopefully approved in there. So we've got the parking fees being reestablished, the expanded fees, and we've got two or three other ones that we need to take a look at, hopefully.
Will that all come with this board, or can we stretch that into next year?
No, it's all on December 6th.
December 6th.
So this meeting's going to go forever? To yes. The wee hours of the morning.
It's countywide budget adoption, so.
Yeah.
But despite that fact, I think. I think that face value of this group is important at that meeting. That even if you can't stay for the whole meeting, they know your faces. And I think if nothing else, we need to be there so that our voices are strongly heard on the logic and work that substantiates the Parks Comprehensive Plan as it's written and supports the PIF increase. Don't want to make it too easy on them to slide it on back.
They did vote on the Parks Plan. They voted to support the Parks Plan,
yes.
And the CFP is a major component of that plan.
Yes.
Yeah. This is a backing off of that.
The Commission acknowledged last night the discomfort of having to not support it, but not enough to go in the middle.
We were surprised at how the vote went last night. We're talking about it at time. It was unanimous across the board.
I thought that too. No one else said, what if we do something in the middle? Or what if we do this? I was thinking that too.
Yeah.
Somebody
would support something in the middle. I really thought that.
Correct. That's how it felt to me. Because there was no other. Yeah.
Yeah.
No way had an independent thought.
With no discussion of, what if, well, that's really high, 20 over 5 is really low, what about something in the middle? There wasn't even that
there
to
no
banter around
anyway.
For a second.
Yeah.
It was just, unanimous 5-0 for the 20 over 5. I thought that too. And that gave me the willies. I was like, no, no.
Okay.
All right, moving right along. Golly, Moses.
And I'm going to have to leave and go work on this.
On that happy note, Lori's leaving.
Leaving to go work on the staff report.
Yes, go work on that staff report.
I appreciated people coming out and testifying. I know it's time out of your schedule.
Yeah, but you know, you work hard on it. You need us there to support you because you're supporting us.
Try to be there on the 6th.
Youth member update. It's got Barbara and John here on this.
Yeah, it's just an update. It's
I thought that was Bill because made the motion at the last meeting to go with what law allowed, and we discovered that law wouldn't allow them to be voting members.
Right.
So.
Amanda, do you want to provide us any information on this?
Well, there is a state statute that limits our county park and recreation boards to 7 members. We, I believe, have more than 7 members. I believe under our county code it's 9. Most counties that I took a look at and cities have more than 7. So I don't, and I couldn't get any information as to why there's a difference between what our code says and what the statute says. The bottom line is, if we did want to expand the number of people on the board, at a minimum, it would take an ordinance and a public hearing to change at least our parks code. I don't believe that anybody would necessarily sue us claiming that we have too many people on our volunteer path in violation of the state statute. So basically what happens is we'd have to submit the paperwork and go through a code change so that we can have an additional voting member, if that's the direction that we wanted to go in.
So if we brought them on as a non-voting member, which of course doesn't, I mean, we even have thought about giving our schools and such voting rights, but we can't on that.
I'm finding more and more conflicts of interest.
So you're glad you don't
have it.
We don't require an ordinance for that. Not if they're non-voting. Okay, so, and I guess our motion last time was to bring them on the way we could we get their input.
I don't know if there's
because it's really their input we value.
I know we have a 7 member limit, but I don't know if there's a limitation to ex officio members.
No, because we've got Temple and Kay and
So the state statute this is all it says is each county may form a county park and recreation board composed of 7 members who shall be appointed by the Board of County Commissioners to serve without compensation.
Right.
Doesn't say 7 voting members, doesn't say minimum of. Doesn't put any qualifiers on it, which is why I don't know why, when I was researching this issue, I think Snohomish County has a 15-member PAB, some cities, I think Seattle has 11 members, whatever. I mean, it's a wide variety out there. So I don't know where that difference comes from, but there's no qualifiers or limitations in the state statutes.
Okay. Thank you, Amanda. Appreciate it. And I guess the discussion that we had was that maybe we should try it out with a youth member as an ex officio and just see what kind of stability we get, attendance, that kind of thing. If we find out that it's really a working program, then we can pursue changing the ordinance in the future.
So can staff issue that staff report to the BLCC?
Yes. We can say that in the staff report, say that the Parks Advisory Board has recommended this, and we take it to the BOCC. Okay, so is that a hearing change ordinance?
It has to go through the
whole hearing process.
I'll take good care of it. Very
good. Just to add in as a non-voting member,
we have
to change the ordinance. No, in the future, if we do want to add them as a voting member, we'll have to change
the I understand that. But if we want to add them now as a non-voting member,
correct.
The process to do that is to have the BOCC recruit them, right?
Yes. Or is it the county manager appoints?
I don't think they recruit ex officios.
Oh, the county manager? We can talk with Mark about that when
the
we
county, the councils only recruit the voting members.
Oh, only the voting
Otherwise,
members.
Otherwise, you know, we'd have Jennifer and right, Temple that would be interviewed.
Oh, yeah. They're going to be in trouble later. Because we've got Elizabeth, will be invaluable as far as locating.
Right. So I think we can just bring that person on.
So we can just identify and bring them on?
Correct.
Okay. We can work on that. Super.
Do you have someone in mind?
I got a couple of kids in mind.
Do you?
Nope, I just didn't know if you needed
really?
I just can connect us to people who might have the right pieces. Yeah, I mean, like our CTE program or ITEL preparatory program that has an externship as a requirement of their program, things like that. So it just, if you need ideas, I could reach out to some people, that's all.
Okay, super duper. New business, homeless camp.
We recently received a policy that came from our PA's office that was derived from a lawsuit, and it is through district court. And this is a policy that was passed down through our administration. And basically, we are to follow it until and use it as a starting point for a countywide policy. And essentially, it talks primarily about personal belongings. And so if there's personal belongings that we find in a park or any property, we are to post it for 72 hours. And so we'll have a posting with the contact information and let them know that it's 72 hours. They have to remove their property or we can take it. And so there's provisions about that. We have garbage and we have personal property, and it's spelled out within the policy what personal property constitutes. And so it's the tents and it's clothing and it's, you know, personal effects, anything that does not have a name on it. At which time, if the 72 hours has passed and that property is still there, we can collect it and we can take it to either, I can remember the Son of the Carpenters or something like that. There's a specific place we can take it to that has agreed to take that property, or we can store it ourselves. And so it's kind of problematic as to how we're going to be able to store some of the stuff, or we can toss it, I believe. But there's some provisions, but we do have to take a picture of the posting in front of the personal property. And so this is a work in progress. So we've had one meeting so far with the PA's office, and there are many more meetings to come. The property that is identified as county property is very limited. We need to expand that scope. So, because you've got several property owners in the county, we got legacy lands, we got parks, we got transportation, we got clean water, all those groups. We got sheriff's office owns property. So there's a bunch of different properties out there. So this is going to be an all-encompassing policy that addresses the broadest scope possible. So everybody knows exactly how to address personal property. And so we want to make sure that we do not find ourselves in another lawsuit. So we want to make sure that we are following policy. That's pretty much it right now. More to come. There's going to be probably four or five.
Remove it?
No.
Well, the issue is not necessarily the removal. You can remove it if you give notice. The issue is, do you remove all of it or do you throw some of it away because it looks like it's trash? And so that's where you get into the fuzzy issue. This is why Clark County got in trouble earlier, was because they just went through and dumped it. Well, to some people, that's valuable property. And so that's where the issue is, and that's why we're taking photos, and that's why we're posting, and that's why we're offering people an opportunity to come pick it up, is because it may look like trash to us, but it may not be trash to whoever's property it is. And so that's the balance we're striking at this point, is that yes, there's some trash out there, it's pretty clear, it's a food container, whatever it is, that's trash, but is the soggy pile of clothing trash, or is that property? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you think about it, even if, and Bill brought this up too, when you're at a park, and I saw this at Wyatt Park last time I ran through there, you know, there's a sweatshirt that's left on the play equipment, okay, so that's somebody's sweatshirt. Do you turn that into lost and found?
Correct.
It was a soggy mess. Is it now just trash because it's you know, who's going to come play in the soggy sweatshirt. So that's the sort of thing that we have to figure out is it something that has value to someone that they need to be able to come pick it up, or is it something that we can just throw it away? If we throw it away, there are some other legal implications in that, and that's kind of what got us into trouble earlier.
Yeah, we're told not to actually, if we pick up a backpack, we're not to go through it and, you know, identify all the contents. I mean, it's pretty sticky in some areas. But, you know, the nature of homeless people, we're not supposed to call them homeless people anymore, is that they, so within their trash.
What do you say? What's the word then?
What's a PC term for them?
I don't know yet. It's an outdoor enthusiast. Oh, we don't.
Really?
But, you know, some people have got their social security cards because they have no place else to put them. But there are other important documents for their life that they need to get by with, and some of that stuff could be picked up. So we're going to abide by that policy, even though it's district court's policy right now. But we're going to use it as a fundamental starting point for a countywide policy.
Will any of this come with additional funding?
No.
Well, it would be interesting when you get it written, if I could see a copy of it just for the school stuff, because we have some key pieces of property that were just clear about. We just tell them this isn't going to happen anymore. We'll be back on Tuesday. And then our DROs and maintenance crew come back on Tuesday.
Well, we, you know, when we actually encounter folks that are camping, we tell them, hey, we've got this here. It's right there. County code states you cannot spend the night. And we can do that.
Okay, well, yeah, that would be interesting.
Yeah, I can send that policy to you.
Yeah, so, I see what...
And like Amanda said, it's kind of a hard line. You can kind of tell what, you know, like somebody's personal belongings, like homeless folks, outdoor enthusiast folks, versus somebody who's left their stuff behind. You have a beach towel and a pair of slippers, you know, next to the beach. You know, we do have a lost and found for that, and we hold it for, you know, about a month, and then we turn it over to the Salvation Army afterwards, you know.
I can imagine a school and a park next to each other, and you can park people picking it up, put it over in school district, and it's going to come and be good for it.
There you go.
That'd be horrible.
Think in advance.
Good plan.
Kicks it out.
Partnerships, I suppose.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
So I'll keep you apprised as this evolves. And so thank you, Amanda. I appreciate it.
And so on to your report.
I'm going to stand up. Does anybody want to take a break real quick?
Sure.
I think he just said he did. How else would you take that?
Going to send this to you. And when he saw me, what? Yes. You're getting rid of that. Well, I got to take it back to Kelly. And he's, well, you're not taking it back empty, are you? I said, why? And then he came out with that little thing. He does so many nice things for us. You should do something nice for you. And he's like, I don't have the energy. So, yes, I had to laugh.
Yeah.
Kids are wonderful, you know that.
What was that? Was it case law about no vesting of impact fees? Did you? Did she say that? Is it? She was talking about January 1, no more vesting of impact fees.
Yes, look at
I don't see on here where you're going to go around the room. Is that something?
Round table?
Round table?
It's on there.
Oh, it's on the back side.
I thought, yeah.
It's on the, I didn't think of it.
You were already preparing your round table speech?
No. Yeah, well, I got it.
Fiance, so. I am not your chair. Stay in line.
She said, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to figure out where the trail subcommittee was.
Oh, I'm there. Back here, hanging back there.
Yeah,
because
that's.
So did Jay leave?
No, his coat's still there.
Oh, yes.
No, his coat's still here.
Yeah, his coat's here.
So windy.
I don't do a lot of the
We did that big waterfront park, but didn't get it.
Oh, really?
Second.
So, my father-in-law is Bronson.
Bronson Potter?
Mm-hmm. And he was telling us that, I'm confused on who's funding that park. So
it's city parks fund.
All of it?
No, there's some state.
He said
funding.
There's like some grants.
Yeah, there's
too.
A state grant in it.
And okay.
Yeah,
and it's
of course the developer is paying some of it. But, they're struggling to figure out how it's going to come.
Yeah,
it's a tough one.
Yeah,
I didn't know about
it. No, that's like your elevator coming up.
So
that sometimes is a good thing and sometimes a bad thing. Yeah, and I'm completely aware of the dichotomy.
I always thought the world of him is, you know, Ted Gaethje never was close.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Ted brought him over to the city and placed
gas. Yeah. So. Negotiated himself a heck of a deal leaving the county.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to take the vacation I have from the county that I have stored up and I'm going to have the city give it to me. He's good. He's a scary father-in-law sometimes. Although after 13 years, 14 years being with his son, I finally tamed him somewhat. But,
so it's that sheet right there.
Yeah, I get some of my, like, what Vancouver is doing with their parks kind of from him.
Oh, the very last page
because your mother-in-law is also involved. I mean, I've worked with her for years.
Yeah.
She and I were on the original group that started the Columbia Land Trust.
Yep, yep.
And the fish
hatchery.
And my sister works at Columbia Springs.
Oh, does she?
Yeah,
so you know all this. I don't need to tell you about it.
No,
you already know.
I don't know enough. I still feel like I have so much.
Okay, send it to me.
I've got
to. Please put it in my file.
There you go.
So
I can do that.
Yeah, Jane's in Thailand.
Well, I would like
she's
to
coming home right now. She went on a 3.5-week trip to Thailand with Rotary.
It solidifies that it was worth
good
it.
Good for her, but bad for me with my babysitting. Yeah. I was like, I kind of need you here to.
We're ready to give up. It's good to go back and see that you made some progress.
Yeah, we actually did quite a bit this year. Amazing.
So, Anja, Phil, give us some updates.
Let me get started?
Might
yes,
well.
Please.
Good. Okay. Well, this is our year in review, if you will. Starting off, just basically, I want to thank everybody for their help because we've got a lot accomplished in 2016. Thanks to our Parks Advisory Board, our neighborhood associations, Molotta, and we have a ton of volunteer help this year, including yourselves and stakeholders. We've talked to a lot of people and reached out to a lot of folks, and we've had a lot of accomplishments, a lot of challenges. Our first focus was Parks to Vision Growth. Because of concurrency, we had to go up into the acquisition mode, which we actually started in 2015, and it's taken us quite a long time to get the parks acquired. So we've got, you can see this in the following slides, but we acquired 4 properties this year, covering 75.59 acres. Go ahead, Jeremy. Personal Curtain Springs Wildlife Habitat, 33.63 acres, just north of Green Meadows and Andreessen here in Patton Parkway. So we've got 3 years to turn that into the habitat that it's supposed to be.
Is that the one that was donated?
Yes.
By Jean?
Elizabeth E. Swanson.
There we go.
Yep. Okay. She donated it to us with provisions. So we are working on a site plan right now using Jane Tessner-Kleiner to help us with that effort. So we've done a survey already. We've done a site analysis. What else, Jeremy?
Wetland
study.
Archaeological.
Yeah. Cultural assessment. Yeah. And we've hired the DNR crew to go in and actually remove all the cross-fencing throughout the site. There's cross-fencing all over the place. They came in and brushed down the debris. And so our next step is to let the game over magic, essentially. So. We hope to have a site plan completed sometime next year, and then whatever improvements we do make as a result of that site plan. Actually, go to the next sheet. Here's the concept plan right here. So what's intended is a play area. Here's where the barn is at. So it's going to be a shelter here, a walking path that's loop here. As a part of the provision, we cannot affect anything more than what the existing footprints of the structures are out there. Everything else can be. Everything else has to be passive recreation only. You're going to see some chip trails throughout the course of the area. And the rest, it's actually intended for wildlife habitat. So
we can have a play area, though.
What's that?
We can have a play area there?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, it's not. We can't be a bona fide playground like what we got. It
can be passive recreation,
like a nature scape.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's some of those cool things that she was showing us there at the meeting.
Yes,
like
exactly.
Yeah,
the nature scape components are that's what we can accomplish that.
So is the house staying, Bill?
Good question, Kelsey.
Still don't know.
It's a cool house.
Yeah.
It's neat.
Yeah.
We're getting $1,800 a month from it. And we've got basically a living caretaker that pays us to be there. I hate to tear it down, but that might be the case. The barn is going down.
Uh-huh.
It's not going to hold itself up. So the structural assessment told us that. So we have to make that determination at some point in time, if it goes down or if it stays, I don't know. If we keep it at some point in time, we probably need to make it into some kind of a meeting hall or something. But you know, with old homes, it's broken up in a lot of small rooms.
Mm-hmm.
It'd take a complete restructuring. It's going to cost a lot of money. So.
Is there any potential of saving some of the barn materials for shelter or any kind of
some site? With the shelter that that's going to be out there? We're talking about using some of the old barn wood for that facade, so it kind of looks. We have some of the features that used to be there after the barn was removed. Minnehaha, we bought this piece of property. Here's Minnehaha right here, 17. Hinsdale Park is up here. Heritage Farm is just above it. First neighborhood park in this area. Perfect piece of ground for us to buy, dead flat, and surrounded by homes, as you can see. And it was a great purchase, and we were very lucky. It was actually on the market for sale, and we bought this one. So I think we lucked out on that one. North Fairgrounds, 5 acres. So here's the fairgrounds right here. And so this is you go up Delco Road, it's one block. We have a 5 acre piece right here, stone R110. And of course, with this whole planning process is going to 179th Street interchange. I can just see everything's going to change in the near future. I can just see this thing all blowing out. So I'm happy that we got this piece of property where we got it. We are still looking in the 5th 10 for more properties. That was one of the toughest ones to find property in because those properties were very difficult. We went through probably 8 to 12 properties. There were valleys or they had a creek running through them, and they were landlocked. And it was really difficult to try to find a piece of property. So we're going to keep searching. I think the street of our Parade of Palms is going to be right over here on 29th this year. So properties are getting eaten up all over the place. So we're going to keep our consultant on board and keep looking for properties. So we do have money in that account still for the Prairie Fields. We got lucky when the family approached us. Fifth District 6 is right here. So we were able to buy this piece of property. So it's 32.09 acres. We got it from the Hill family, and they've been operating it as a ball field since 1969. And we are going to continue to operate it as a ball field. And we're working in conjunction with Debbie Hansen with the City of Battleground, who's going to program it for us and hopefully maintain it. So that's the intent going forward. So Jeremy's working on site cleanup. So this house right here comes down, and this barn. We're going to keep this house as a mobile right here, or a manufacturing home. And so we actually adopted a gentleman that's been working on the site as a volunteer. So we kept him on board. We got him signed, got a background check, and he checked out. So we're going to keep him on board.
What part of that? What area of that is the property? Is it the roads, the square?
So it's right here.
Okay. I'm not including that corner.
Yeah, so this whole entire piece right here. Okay. This house is still with the Hill family. I want to keep that. And this property is separate, and so is this one. So,
okay.
And then we do have some, we've got $200,000 that we specified when we bought this property to use the level one cleanup funds for, to make site improvements, make it safe for the public, bring everything up to code. This actually has 17 RV lots with power for overnight camping. So when you have tournaments and stuff, people can spend the night.
What's the acreage? Oh, 32.
32.09. And so this is the old dinger dome right here. Actually, right here is the dinger dome. We're going to get that out, turn it into a community room, practice room for the team, something. And then we're going to actually go through all these buildings. This is the concession stand. We're thinking about taking that down. And then it's really largely up to Debbie how she wants to manage that. So she has a solid need for Little League, Battleground Little Leagues to play. They've been looking for property for a long time. This helps her out, and this helps us out. So had we not bought this, I'm sure this probably would have went into real estate. So overall growth, with the acquisitions, we also inherited Heritage Farm, another 79 acres just down the road here. Go ahead. So a total of acquisition of property that we've acquired this year, 154.59 acres. So here's Heritage Farm. Hope you're all familiar with it. To the right is the master plan that was created back in 2010. It needs to be revised again. As you can see right here, this is the Children's Community Center, right here on 68th, right next to Hillsdale Community Park. What we did, Jeremy actually did a boundary line adjustment. This was actually park property as well. We traded the farm, this property, for this property, so we can create a brand new parking lot and a trailhead system that's going to serve this entire farm. And what we'd like to do is move this Children's Learning Center up to that corner. That used to be where the food bank was going to be established. The establishment across the street here instead. So I'd like to put the Children's Learning Center up there, much better access, much more higher profile. It's kind of right there where the rest of the infrastructure is at. So it's going to get a viewpoint up here.
Where's the food bank going?
Right over there.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful building. And so, for some reason, it didn't work out there. I think it was the on-street improvements they had to make. So,
what's going to happen with that property you traded out? How's that going to work out?
That's going to be a parking lot, a big parking lot for the park. Hillsdale Park has a really bad parking lot.
Okay.
It's gravel.
That's good.
And it's also going to be a trailhead up to this viewpoint as well as this trail system. So we're working with the farm board right now. Since we now have the farm, we have another board. It's the Heritage Farm Board.
We need a new master concept plan on that one.
Yeah, and this is 2010. It really needs to be updated. There's a couple of things on there that
have changed. Yeah.
Yeah, they've changed. So the parking lot is now in right here. This was in that concept, and that has just recently been constructed. Everybody loves it. So, okay, Jeremy. So we've also taken on the Legacy Events program. That's when we adopted Pat Lee, the Legacy Events manager. And so with the Legacy Events program, we took on the 3,150 acres. We've always had a strong nexus with the Legacy Lens program.
It wasn't ours.
Exactly, yes. And so that program's been bounced around. It was in the counselor's office for a while. It went over to DES and some general services, and now it's in Public Works Parks, where it rightfully should be. So Pat and I talk all the time. He's a part of our team. And So we asked him if he could take over Heritage Farm as well, and he agreed to do that. So he manages the farm as well as the legacy lands. So
can we get him here to some of our meetings
yes.
once in a while?
Yeah, he actually came to one a few months ago, but I'll see if I can bring him in for another one. So maybe give us another report on legacy lands. So Parks Division progress, improvements, planning, collaboration, partnerships. So one thing that we accomplished this last year was a one-mile trail extension at Vancouver Lake. And so if you're familiar with Vancouver Lake, this is phase two, so at the northern end of Vancouver Lake. This is the dike road that comes up, goes up top of the highway. We engaged in building the trail. We used 100% volunteer labor. We did use some of my staff, our staff time, our maintenance staff, but mostly volunteers. It was a Washington Trails Association had a big hand in it. A lot of different volunteer groups, kids, adults, everybody came out and helped build this trail. This is kind of what it looks like. It's a really nice trail. Again, the film is going to be used for sporting events like marathons and different things, triathlons. And so in the grand scheme of things, it basically extends our trail system. We've got, we just procured a trail from Frenchman's Bar to Vancouver Lake. It actually extends it out much further. So that worked in conjunction with a project that was going on with CREST and OTAC and the Bundle Power Administration, where they actually put the Buckmeyer Slough. They were taking out some culverts and they put in some bridges. And these were navigable bridges, so you can actually canoe or kayak and canoe under the bridges. And so at the same time that we got that trail completed, they put a bridge right here for us. And so that trail now comes all the way back out to Lower River Road and makes a beautiful loop. So that was a really good project.
I have a question for you now.
Yes.
Do we run marathons in the county? Do we have a program for that?
We have several programs. We don't organize them, but no. Eric, he works with the organizers, and we've got two or three marathons. The first one's down here at Vancouver Lake in January,
okay,
the first one of the year.
Awesome.
Half marathon, full marathon.
Well, that's in the city. When the city is struggling because they are having to close roads and pay for flaggers and people are upset and running and blah, blah, blah. This would be great because people still come to Vancouver.
Yeah.
They could do, you know, more of a wooded setting.
Mm-hmm.
That's really awesome.
So we have at least 2 to 3 marathons, and we have a bunch of triathlons that occur down there.
Very cool. Ooh, triathlons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they always run between Vancouver Lake and Frenchman's Bar, and then backwards down. Okay, here. So this is the book part that I was telling you about. Barrier 1. So this is where our trail comes up. There's the brand new bridge. Comes right back out to the highway. So that's actually north of here. So, sorry. This line is just out of sight, so this is where our brand new trail is at. It goes all the way up to that new bridge. And Barrier 3, we're working on that in 2017. We just met with CREST and OTAC, and they're going to install this bridge for us, take the culvert out, install the bridge in 2017. And then in 2018, we're kind of working on this at the same time. This is actually Little River Road, or on a Rieger Highway. That's just past Vancouver Lake Park. They're actually going to take this big culvert out and put a bridge here. And so they want us to take over this highway. So they want to, DOT currently has possession of it. They want us to take it with the intent of actually us cutting this road off, probably past this barrier, so that vehicles can't go past this area. So it's just bike in, walk in. It's still navigable, or you can still drive across. The hunters can still go there. Farmers who maintain this property here can use this, but it's going to be limited access because right now it's a dump down here at the end. People shoot guns and rifles, all kinds of different things. So it's basically a dead end, and it is lawlessness down there.
So is it back to the gate like it used to have?
Yeah, it's probably going to be like a it's called a sack turnaround area, and so you park the park and go walk bike, and that's actually going to be kind of a portion of our Lewis and Clark Trail, if you will, in the future.
Very good.
We also got a permit established for the City of Vancouver. Vancouver Lake is within the city for the Vancouver Rowing Club, and they reside right here. We don't have a great picture of them, of the facility. So here's the park right in here, and here's the rowing club. Here's the flushing channel that takes you to the Freshman's Bar. And so they want to build a large houseboat, if you will, or boat house, that is, to house all their skulls. And so they got over $500,000 of skulls sitting outside in the rain, and they want to basically put them inside. So that was about a year and a half long project.
Where do they keep their skulls now?
Outside.
Just in the same location?
Yeah, same location. It's all fenced. And so before, they used to have to reside on the side of the lake.
Right, that's what I remember. The tornado back
there? Tornado came through right through this pathway and took out their entire settlement and said, hey, we were relocated where the tornado was.
Yeah.
Went over the lake, took it off, and went over the lake. But, you know, what's the odds of a tornado hitting the same place twice?
Right,
so,
it might be the same as place. That's cool.
Flooding Community Park. So, thanks to Milad again, we acquired the Stewart property last year. We actually turned that derelict house that had been sitting there, with like, I don't know what's that, into a nice piece of ground for a future parking lot. So, I think, can you have another photo of that, Jeremy? This is what it looks like now, or it did look like it. But the one thing we didn't do was a site plan on it. We didn't go through all the permitting and all that, so that's the next step. It's locked up, we can't use it, because we don't want to change the use of it until we get permitted. So we're working with Berger ABAM to help us with the site plan, and once we get that done, go ahead to the next photo. So that's what the gate looks like up in the front. So we will work on the site plan, get that knocked out, and then we'll get that parking lot opened up. Camp Hope, we worked on the master plan this year, and I think we gave a presentation to the Parks Advisory Board, if you recall, and so we go in front of the board. We had, there was a work session last week that I missed, because I was sick. Karen Malone led that charge, but we take it in front of the board on December 13th for consent to get the site, to get the master plan approved. That's what Camp Hope looks like. That's what the master plan is. A lot of these facilities are actually existing, but they want to actually put more buildings in here. So a new lodge right here, the director's home is existing, a new shop, and then they want to put a large, there's a restroom here existing, they want to put a big cafeteria in here, if you will, and it picks up all these pods right here. So they've got a lot of ambitious folks that really want to see this Camp Hope turn into something more than what it's been traditionally. So we've owned this property since 1936. We got it at the same time that we got Louisville Park. It's on the opposite side of the river. Louisville's just to the north. Boy Scout Camp is to the northeast. And so when the Camp Hope folks came in on board, they cleaned up the site and really turned it into a facility that you can actually already camp at overnight. So, but.
Electrical
small
issues.
Right over here.
Something is slightly awry.
Yeah.
Okay. Pacific Community Park, working with the Victor River Municipal Senior Softball League and a bunch of great guys. And fortunately, they're well funded, and they have built this softball field right here. And in doing that, as a requirement, code requirement, they have to actually expand the parking lot. The parking lot has to be built before they can play games on this field. So they were working in partnership with Miracle League, who has been kind of fizzling out on us, which is unfortunate. So this is the Miracle League section right here, and they're largely MIA right now. So Vancouver Municipal Senior Softball are going to use their funding to build this parking lot. And then at some time in the future, when Miracle League wants to come forward, they'll have to pay for half that parking lot plus what their fuel is in. If they pretty much bail out altogether, we'll allow Vancouver Municipal to build another field here themselves. So it's been a really great relationship. That's an excellent public-private relationship example. It didn't cost us any money whatsoever. So we worked on the Lackmas Lake trail alignment study, had a lot of stakeholders there, and I think we met, Gene Akers was involved with us. I think we worked on it for about 8 weeks, 9 weeks, maybe a little longer than that. And we had two stakeholder meetings out there at the new campus lodge, and we had decided which trails should stay, which ones should go, and they came to a consensus that which ones they wanted to retain. And they're a little upset about the new developments up here. A lot of trails up in this area, which is actually on private land. This is now a school right in here. So we got two different developments on the Lawson Trail system, so that made these trails ever in terms of our park that much more valuable. And so we need our next step essentially is to go out and update our "You Are Here" signs so you can tell where your trails are at. Wayfinding signs so you can actually get lost out here. So that was a great relationship. Working with the City of Camas on a sewer line project. And so this is Camp Curry right here, this piece. All the way through here is Camp Curry. City of Camas came to us, this is Green Mountain. They're building huge subdivision. Basically, that whole southern face of Green Mountain is going to be homes. And I think 1,500 in the first phase, maybe not quite that many, maybe 1,200 in the first phase. There's several other phases that pretty much wrap around the south face and the western face of Green Mountain. So they needed a sewer line. We needed a trail. And so here's Lackland Street. And as you will know, there's Lackland Heritage Trailhead parking lot. Restroom. The trail runs all the way down to the Camas' lodge, which actually ties back into our Lackness Lake Park. And so at some point in the future, Camas is going to abandon Ledbetter Road and turn that into a trail. So what that's going to do is Ledbetter Road that goes all the way down to the Everett and then back down to Lackness. It's going to create a loop trail all the way around this lake. And it's also going to provide us a trail tie-in to Green Mountain. Another 300-acre park property. So it's a neighborhood park. We're developing that right now. And the dedication is December 3rd at 1:30. And Mulata set that up with the Philander Neighborhood Association. And so thank you for hosting that, Mulata. And so that is coming along really nicely. They're pouring the chips for the playground today.
We were on the news last night of a lot of vandalism done in that park.
What happened? It was really bad.
We had, from the story, I heard that three teenagers came in and at some time in the night, last Thursday night. They broke off a lot of the brand new trees and pulled a lot of plants out of the ground and just drug stuff all over the place.
I went running through it Friday morning and thought, what happened?
Yeah.
This poor park, that's frustrating.
We don't know if it was the result of the election or maybe they were riding over a park and they said to come over and finish the job in Vancouver. But
terrible.
Anyway, so I guess there was an article in the paper yesterday about that, and I was called. The sheriff's office said $10,000 worth of damage, but I think it's more like about $1,500. Tucker Scott grabbed me today, and they are the contractor. Robertson Olson is going to replace those trees. So I think probably somewhere in the neighborhood of $1,500 to get those trees replaced. So thank you, Mulata, for your offer, and Terry, to replace those. They're also going to address the boulders as well. There's a couple of rocks that they're going to add. And so we want to make sure that nobody can drive into the park off the street and go in and do cookies. And so the park will be finished right before the dedication. So they're going to do some hydro seeding behind the basketball hoops that are going in. And so we're looking forward to it. So it's nice to be able to build brand new parks and turn them over to the community.
This is a great park, yeah.
It is.
This is incredible.
It's right next to one of your school properties, too. So.
Yeah. I walked my dogs out there whenever I can, which I will be doing after today's meeting, but I overheard two little kids out one day that I was out there, and they're like, I can't wait for it to open. I'm going to be out there every day. Like, they're so excited.
They're already out there.
Yeah.
Like, they're already. We walked by and there were kids on the play equipment, and I was just like, just so y'all know.
Yeah.
So all three of you live in the neighborhood?
This has added a whole nother sort of loop park to some of my walking and running routes, and I have not yet been in this park alone. There, it is that it's not open, and there's tape around some things, and people are already walking these trails.
People are here, so
I've never been there by myself.
That's cool.
It's been really awesome, yeah.
It's been a long time in the waiting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
2003. Yes.
Yeah.
It's
really great.
This is, I'm sorry we don't have a better picture of Tower Crest. We actually do have a construction photo, but this is Tower Crest Neighborhood Park, which is nearing completion as well. The dedication for that will be in the early spring of next year. So it's coming along, standing down beneath Robertson Olson. Are building it, and I don't normally like to see it, but it's coming along very, very well. So there's a construction photo of it. Little Creek Park, we did a trails plan on that one, so that was the Little Creek Restoration Committee and the Northwest Trail Alliance. That's a biking club that kind of worked together, and they wanted to name some of those trails. Remember, that's more recent, and I brought that to you recently.
Last meeting.
And so that's pretty much wrapped up. We've got an off-leash park that we established at English Pit, called English Pit. So here's the rifle range right here. And here's the off-leash area. Here's the Poverty Sports Association. Here's the Humane Society. And so at some point in the future, it hasn't been developed yet. Of course, with dog paw, they need money to put a parking lot in. That's the biggest nemesis, is it's $500,000 to put a parking lot in. And gravel is not an option. So we're going to do on-site drainage and everything. So they're out fundraising right now. Also working with the Harmony Sports folks, Washington Timbers, on a parking lot plan. And so at some point in time, Northeast 13th Street is now a three-way intersection. We want to turn it into a four-way intersection and improve this parking lot, which will also be an access point for the off-leash area. So this road right here, 192nd, is getting so wildly used, it is very hard to take a left out of here. So they almost need a traffic light, so it makes sense to align both these facilities with that 13th. So Costco's right here. Cook Creek Woods, Community Park and Trailhead. So Flood and Neighborhood Association got this concept plan wrapped up, and we took it in front of the board and got that approved. And so when the intent is to start working on that this next year, going after a grant in 2018. And then the funding for the grant, if we're successful, I hope we will be issued in 2019, but we can start working on it sooner. Trailhead, basically it's a parking lot for the park, Trailhead as well, because this is Cougar Creek down here. 119th Street is right here. We have a Cougar Creek Trail that ties into the Seven Creek Greenway Trail. And then running this trail from the River High School, essentially. So, nice plan in place going forward. Hopkinson Meadows Community Golf Park. This golf course. We brought this one to you recently, and so this is on the 40-acre parcel north of the golf park. And so that one's we're gonna put that in front of the boards. Is it the 22nd of this month? So next week, essentially, next Tuesday, to get that approved. So at the Parks Advisory Board and the Collaborative Partnerships, we had two events. Thank you, Barbara, for really setting that up, and Melada. July 16th, we had the PATH picnic, and that was a great success. We had a lot of folks show up, and it was a good time. And then we had the All PATH meeting more recently in October down here at Heritage Farm, and that was a really good turnout. So trying to reach out and start and bring all these stakeholders together, you know, the different entities, and start collaborating with all of our different advisory boards. And so I think 2017 we'll do more of the same, and I think we're getting some traction, which I'm really looking forward to. And I really want some help with this Lewiston Clark Trail. So we'll actually have a project that we can work on together. It's a great way to do it. So grants that we applied for this year: Phase 2 Selection Prairie River Trail, Phase 1 Daybreak Regional Park Development, Phase 2 Lewis River Ranch Property Acquisition. Got a grant this year from the Parks Foundation for the Children's Garden at Flight Park. That was great.
And what was the amount of that grant?
What's that?
What was the amount of that grant?
$10,000. Okay. And we had two RCO youth athletic facility grants. One was the lighting at Luke Jensen Sports Complex, and a third soccer field at Harmony Sports Association. And those were both granted. And more recently, the National Park Service Technical Assistance Grant for the Lewis and Clark Trail. So here's the first one. This is Selection Prairie. Here's the existing trail that we've got. Battleground Lake State Park. City of Battleground down here. And so Battleground is actually building their trail all the way up to this extent. So if we get this grant, which we will know pretty soon, we'll be able to build this stretch, and then we'll have this stretch remaining, and then we'll have an actual connection between the state park and the city, which I'm really excited about.
It's been a long time coming.
Oh, man. That's just four segments of about 33 segments altogether. So that Selachie Trail goes from Vancouver Lake all the way up to Selachie, which is huge. So
And on over to Yakima if we had our way.
What's that?
And on over to Yakima if we had our way.
Yes, exactly. So here at the Jensen, this field right behind you is field three. Lighting. So we got lighting here and here and here. And we want, and we're gonna, because of this grant that we've received, we're gonna have lighting on this field.
So there gonna be any neighborhood objection to that, or we got through all that?
No, it was all during the site plan. Everybody,
everything.
Yeah, talked. The standing rule right now is the lights go off at 10 o'clock. Whoever's ahead wins. Okay. So.
So you just drag your feet like
that is wrong.
Strategic coaching there then.
Strategic coaching. Yeah.
I like just it. Go real slow up there, guys.
It's a company out of Illinois that actually turns the lights off, so we have no control over that.
Oh,
I'm
kidding
you. Yeah. Must go. So.
Awesome.
Really? Wow.
Really? They do it.
Yeah, okay, it's cool. All my kids.
That's
I'm
right.
Sorry.
Harbor Sports Complex. So they recently put in two brand new synthetic fields here, which is fantastic. So you can't really see it, but the third field from the Youth Athletic Facilities Grant will go right here. So it'll be a nice addition. So since those two fields went in, the usage out there in the wintertime has skyrocketed. They went from just a few cars a day to, I bet Jay had to deal with that biggest stick on this, to about 300 to 400 cars a day, every day throughout the wintertime. It's amazing. Here's the Flying Children's Garden. And so thank you to the Parks Foundation again and the Flying Neighborhood Association for putting this together. And so we're going to be working on this early next year, right, Moana?
Correct. The survey has been done. Now it's in the engineering design.
Cool. Awesome. We always look forward to those Parks Foundation grants. They're wonderful. And the Lewis and Clark Trail, that's the National Park Service grant that we just got. And so that's going to tie all these little trail segments from the wildlife refuge down here in Washtenaw, the wildlife refuge up here in Richfield. And so and basically beyond going up into Abrams Park, and they want to keep going once they get it. But, so again, a lot of different jurisdictions coming together. More recently, the Washtenaw just built their waterfront park and added about a mile of trail, which I thought was fantastic. And so this small little stretch here, I think, Suzanne Grover, she's the parks director for Washtenaw. It's got a grant right now to make that last.
Are they going to do that on the road in front of the houses? Is that how they on the north side?
I think
of the
it's
house?
Going to be on the frontage road between the highway.
Yeah, that's where we plan to go.
Yeah, just make that connection. So looking forward, got the Sorcerer's Park dedication coming up Saturday, and the Flying Neighborhood Association is sponsoring that event. So December 3rd at 1:30. And so it's going to be about a half hour event at the park itself. We're not sure what the weather's going to be like, but then we're going up to the back stairs, I believe, for refreshments. So everybody wants to come, please come. Join us.
To the where?
It's a, what's the name of the building, Malata?
It's the Philida Village building.
Philida Village.
It has a back stairs neighborhood room up there.
It's right there on Northwest 36th.
So it's going to be where Mount Tabor Brewing is going in.
But it's
yes.
Not
yes.
Going
yes.
In.
Yes.
Nothing has happened.
I know,
me too. I was like, I know. I don't think it's happening.
It's supposed to be a sneaky
one, though.
Same
with
the cocktail shop, too. It was
going to
be a Heinz coffee,
and then
they
lost it, and then it became this one. So we're looking forward to that. And then, of course, Jeremy is working on the PIF 5. That acquisition that we were talking about, I think that's in the next phase. And then, go ahead and turn the picture there, or the next photo. So this is the piece that we're negotiating right now on with the Oliva family. And so here's 119th Street, East Ridge Business Park is down here. And it's actually about a 6-acre parcel.
It's 99th Street.
Oh, I'm sorry, 99th Street, I'm sorry. Yeah, 99th Street and about 133rd, 132nd. In that area, and so it's kind of back in here, and so it's going to have, we're talking about a road coming through on this side of it, so we're working with the developer on that, and then with any luck, we should know what the appraisals will be at the end of this month.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to get the appraisal back, I think, next week, if I'm not mistaken.
What are those ponds in the other side of the road there?
Over here, wetlands. Right here?
Yeah, what are those?
Wetlands. So this property is largely high and dry. There's a little wet spot maybe here and up in here. This is a future arterial alignment.
It's right what? Here. Say that again.
This is a future arterial
road
alignment. So we're not going to take anything on that side. So we're just going to take this piece. So actually, by the time this gets sucked down, and there's a road that's going to go through here, so it's a circulation road, that should be about 6 acres. So we hope that the appraisal comes in at a reasonable amount of money so we can actually buy it.
Yeah.
If we don't get this property, we are in trouble. Because concurrency was at the end of September. So we have an option agreement, and if it all works out, we'll
the Olivas own it?
What's that?
Did you say the Olivas own it?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We've been working with Josh Oliva on that. So, Parks Division funding, kind of mentioned here already about the PIF, what's been going on with that, you know, fully aware of what's happening there. So, the big day, of course, we have the work session with the board on November 30th, but December 6th is the big day when the decisions are being made,
yeah.
Not only with PIFs, but with our funding, our decision packages that are going forward. So, fingers crossed, hopefully it'll be a good evening for us. We'll see. This has happened. This is fantastic. So the Eleanor Pearson family, the folks that we bought the Pearson property from back in 1995. The county's portion of the money that we paid to them to buy that property, they put into a trust account, and upon her death, they actually gave it back to us.
Wow.
And so it actually accrued interest. We thought that she was living off the interest. She actually just let it go. So of the $600,000
wow.
we gave to them, we got $687,000 back.
So that goes, what, into the general fund, or is that go to Parks Foundation?
It was specified that it needed to go back into the Parks system. And so we put it into a specialized account, and we're going to use it for probably an acquisition along the East Fort Lewis. So,
when that same thing, Eleanor Pearson Park.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, we were going to work with...
that's amazing.
Yes, isn't that cool? We almost lost that park earlier
maybe,
this year.
Maybe
yes.
We could put it into the Parks Foundation and use it just out of that as just the earnings or something. I like to grow that program as much as possible.
Yeah.
I mean, we really need to be better partners with them.
Mm-hmm. I think we're talking about that on Monday, right? Yes.
You didn't pay me to say that.
And so
yeah, between that and Curtin Creek, the Green Mountain.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so the Curtin Creek property was worth over $3 million in value. So, you know, donations are huge for us. It's wonderful. So. We're very, very happy that we just received this money. And so, you know, with the Lewis River Ranch acquisition, that might help for that, because that's a huge piece. Or we might actually put it back into Pearson.
We should be getting those kinds of gifts yearly. It's just so important to get those.
Absolutely. It's huge. Yeah. And we can use it for matching funds, yeah. for grants. It's fantastic. You know, the counselors love to see this kind of thing, because then it means I don't have to come after them for matching funds. So.
Well,
they love to see it too much.
Okay.
They were lying.
So tomorrow, in this room, between 9 o'clock and 11 o'clock, Karen Llewellyn is hosting the annual Volunteer Appreciation Day. And of course, you're all volunteers, so you're invited. And so if you want to come by here and get pruned by us, you're certainly welcome to. I'll be here from 9 to 11. And there's going to be refreshments. And I think she's got some giveaways and stuff like that. So please join us if you'd like to. And that's pretty much it. That's pretty much our year in review.
So you're working 6 days a week now.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm going to.
Actually, seven. He's taking today off.
I'm going to a fundraiser tomorrow night with Sean Jensen. There's an auction for the Washington Timbers.
And those will always cost you money.
Yeah, I got to bring my checkbook.
Yeah.
And it's over Providence Park in the in one of the sky boxes. So.
Oh, cool.
So he's gonna play auctioneer to embarrass himself. So I got to go see that.
Oh, that's
perfect. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Any questions?
Well, that sounds good.
Hope I didn't put you to sleep.
Good information, though, I think. So, see,
That's probably why the planning commission doesn't want to give us any more money. They think we're doing too much already.
That takes us on to our subcommittee reports. As you know, one thing that was requested is that each of the subcommittees meet before the end of the year and get the description together. We've only gotten the description from my two subcommittees. So maybe we'll focus on that objective in the new year. I know that you've got a meeting coming up, though. So maybe we'll go to Dave on Parks for his report so he can...
First meeting, December 5th.
And open membership, or...
I really don't want to have a published notice, but yes.
Oh, well, you can have one more. Well, you have one more voting member.
Yeah.
On there, you can
vote with that.
You're not a voting member. You can join them all. You're all.
Oh yeah, I'm Beth
Bailey.
Yeah. You got lots of time on your hands.
See? No, that's not a wonderful partnership with Parks. So Parks will be having their first one. Super thanks, Dave. Chris isn't here. Kelsey, anything to report on your... You just got the trails one. So
what I wanted to do is... I had a list from you of people who were on it, but I wanted to check in because that was a long time ago and kind of reevaluate who wants to be on the trails subcommittee and who doesn't. So... No pressure, but I'll leave this by the sign-up sheet over here. I won't pass it around so then everyone's staring at you to see if you sign it or not.
You're too generous.
If you could, so I can kind of have a tally of who may be interested and, you know, who doesn't feel like they have time for it. That way we can kind of regroup, I guess. So.
Jamie had to leave with a family emergency. But we know that he's been crashing through with this Harmony Center on Sports.
Mm-hmm.
Which takes us to...
Want me to talk about that real briefly?
Excuse me?
Can I talk about that real briefly?
Sure.
So we've had two groups approach us out at the Harmony Sports Association. One's a private investor who wants to build an indoor sports arena, a rather large one.
Yeah.
It's going to be for profit. That's what they want to do. They want a long-term investment return, so they're not, you know, in it to make a lot of money right away, but it will be for profit. The Mountain View Ice Arena, I understand, is being closed down soon. It's the only ice house we have in Vancouver, and they need to find another home as well. The church property that Ice Arena sits on wants to expand their church, and so they approached us as well. So Jay has been working on the Harmony Sports Association, looking around as to where placement can be, so we get those two partners working together to help pay for road frontage improvements in the parking lot, and then also working with two government officials on a legislative funding source. And so Liz Pike and Ann Rivers, that's who they've been working with, and they are going to go after some funding at the legislative level. So. They supply 25% of the total project, so we need partners to help pay for the other 75%. So that's where these two...
Boy, there's going to be a lot of work in that, developing a private for-profit.
Yeah.
I can see a non-profit.
Yeah, but, I don't...
Amanda, looking into that, see what we do.
Why does it have to be for-profit? Can't they do a non-profit and then lease out the operation for a profit?
No, it's the structure that they have. It's an entrepreneur who recently sold a business. He's got millions of dollars. He's looking for just a long-term investment, and he wants to help his kids. He's got two kids that play there at Harmony.
So wait, legislators are going to ask for money to help a for-profit company build a...
Well, basically what we told them is whatever you build on that site becomes county property. So
okay.
The building will become ours.
Okay.
But the business itself will be for profit.
And so they'll be responsible for...
Essentially.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, well,
all right. I feel better with that. Yeah.
Whatever, scared me for a minute.
That's the underlying rule, is whatever gets built on our property is our property.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if they were to walk away at some point in the future, we
did that with Christensen Boat Yachts. They built their marina there on public property, but it's private business, but we own the land under it, and if they ever close out the property.
Right.
So it has happened before.
Yes, and there's a couple of examples up in northern Washington where that's existing, and so we want to take a look at what they've got in place and plagiarize that if possible. So we want to, you know, basically, in this world, we need to actually look at public-private relationships and see how we can work those deals out. You know, VMSSA is a great example where they're building a softball field.
But we got to make sure we have representation from the public side of those things.
Oh, yes.
Because they'll bully you to the best of their ability.
Yeah, I think
we'll be watching.
We'll be watching.
So they're exploring that right now, and it's a work in progress. So go ahead. Yeah. Sorry.
Well, thank you for that update. I know that I've been talking with Jane. There were some exciting things going there. So we'll go back to you for roundtable. We'll start with you.
Me?
Yeah, sure.
Thanks for attending all these meetings. It's been a wonderful year. And thank you for being the chair, both you and John. And I look forward to working with our new chairs as well. And of course, seeing you as a new whip, I know what to get you for Christmas now.
I do not look good in black.
Yeah, but you look good with that whip in your hand.
Laura.
Oh, I'm just really excited to learn more about parks. I've been with parks for a whole month now. And it's just such a wonderful group of people. And getting to know more about PAV has been great, too. You guys do so many good things. So I'm just really excited to be here.
Watch that TV show, Parks. Actually,
got
some truth to it.
A lot.
Here's hints of truth.
True that. Well, welcome to the group. We're glad to have you, too.
We'll keep you busy.
God bless you. Mr. Kelly.
We have scheduled a meeting with Mark McCulley for next Tuesday, I believe it is. I was hoping that both Jay and I and our whip can be there for that. If anybody has anything they'd like us to address with him, including yourself, I want to make sure that he understands what we're about and what he expects from us. But I'd like to think we're advocates for parks, and we will advocate for things up to they tell us shut up or something, but I want to be pretty strong on the fact that that's our role. It isn't advisory, it's an advocate. It's both advisory and advocate for park systems. So I'm sure he knows that, but I think with a change of leadership, we need to have that discussion with him. So that'll happen. One of the things, as most of you know, I spend the winters down in South America, so I won't be here in December, January, and possibly part of February. Well, I know part of February. I don't know where that meeting falls for February. So my thought was, if I was going to accept being a co-chair, I would manage, like we did in the old days, we used to have co-chairs, and Roy used to manage or co-chair six meetings. Florence would chair six meetings. So we'll work that out between us.
Okay.
And so that there won't be this fun misunderstanding of who's going to be chairing the meeting.
Sure.
We'll have that up. And I will plan to Skype the meeting, so even though I'll be gone, I won't be gone. And
that worked out pretty good last time, I think.
I thought it worked well. It worked out fine, yeah. And what else did I have here? Oh, I already mentioned Sorensen Park. I heard about the damage on the news last night. And schedule manager. That's it.
Thank you. Yes.
Oh, I will say that I passed on a bunch of good information to our chair of the subcommittee on trails because there's a lot of good information that I don't know that everybody knows about. So
yeah. So sign my list. At least one person, please. I don't really have much except to say that, you know, thanks to Bill and Lori for all your it feels like we've been at a work session or a test, you know, week after week after week. So keep putting in the grind, keep advocating. Say to Barbara, don't give up yet. Barbara, I haven't given up. Don't give up. It doesn't have to be 5 and 20. We got time. And thank you for the birthday cupcake, which I'm going to keep hidden in a box and eat tonight once my kids go to sleep, because if they see it, they'll take it from me. So.
There we go.
Yeah, so thank you for that.
You're welcome. I have nothing to add.
I do.
I'm here. Oh, you got it good.
By the numbers. Oh, the bond that's
coming. A little
bit
of information that Vancouver Public Schools, our board passed November 8th a resolution to put a ballot measure out February 14th.
Someone told me they were rebuilding Columbia Rivers.
Has not yet been solidified until our board passed the resolution. And essentially, this is going to be a perfect timing to go out for bond to the community. And the one side of your sheet has your top 12 facts about the bond, and the other side talks about by the numbers. And just explains a little bit about the amount of the bond and what that means to you as a homeowner, if you live in the county or in our school district boundaries. Essentially, that's the home price of $225,000 in today's dollar value. Property tax does go up $20 per year, so $20, $40, $60 over 3 years before it would drop. We're anticipating a 17 cent reduction. So a 9 cent increase for 3 years, drop 17 cents after that and for the life of the bond. Hmm. So it is a temporary increase. The reason why it drops is because all our other bonds
are paid off.
Fall off. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's the best $60 investment you can make for 458, really 600, excuse me, $562 million investment into our community.
And this, in many ways, this is our recreation side of things, because they have community rooms in all of the elementary and middle schools,
yeah,
and high school, actually. So
yeah, all of our high schools, we have a turf field going in, so that'll help alleviate some of the demand in the community. And so, and then Kiggins will get a little bit of a refresh as well, so we'll have some visitors. Stadium, or visitor seating side, and Columbia River Stadium will get a refresh with the upgrade of their bathrooms and some of the things that are just so badly needed. But anyway, if you guys have any questions about sort of what's in it for me and my neighborhood or where you're at, feel free to give me a call. We're going out on the tour to provide information to the community between now and February 13th. We have about, right now we have about 75 neighborhood and community meetings scheduled, so.
Where are the two new elementary schools?
One of them is on, it's not far from here, off of 88 and east of I-5, so it's
east
between 99 and 79 on the right-hand side of the freeway, really, right-hand side of 99.
Off 25th Avenue?
Yeah, it's 88th and 25th Ave.
Okay.
And there's a big pocket there. It's going to alleviate some of the overcrowding, like Anderson and Hazeldale.
Have you guys acquired the property on the corner there yet?
We haven't. We're not anticipating acquiring any additional property on that corner, but if there's something I need to know, let me know. And then the other elementary school, is it going to be a downtown?
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And so we have several sites and proposals in around that. So we know there'll be over 4,500 permits issued in the next, if not in the works now, issued with the downtown waterfront included. And so that we are hoping brings children. And we know that if it doesn't, it'll help alleviate some overcrowding if it is a school of choice. So we have the kids. We just can't wait to.
And then you're going to add to the arts and academics school.
We're going to expand arts and academics school. We're going to expand a little bit in Columbia River High School. We're going to replace 6 elementary schools. We'll replace 1 middle school. We'll refurbish Kiggins Bowl, and all schools will receive some type of necessary improvement, whether that's an HVAC or heating and cooling roof. I mean, some of the things that you can utilize bond money for that you don't receive operating funds for large ticket items. And then the exciting one related to parks, the last, is we'll be putting in soft surfacing underneath all of our elementary structures, nice. Play structures. So that's exciting. No more wood chips. I shouldn't say no more wood chips because some edging might still have like a wood chip area.
Yeah, beyond the edge.
Underneath will be, yeah, some type of soft surfacing, whether it be cornflakes or they've got, and we don't like the traditional tiles that you see now because they're just like pulled up, but they've got these amazing like Lego locking tiles now that don't peel, and so then there's some great stuff out
cool.
there.
Cool.
Awesome. Love that.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah, the pulls came back pretty favorable, didn't they?
Yeah, so yeah, we've gotten some great feedback. We've worked hard over the last year. We've put on over 10 community symposia for specific neighborhood schools around what they might envision or what they see might need to happen. We've increased our percentage for support in this particular bond related to the dollar amount, specifically by 15 percentage points over last year's statistically valid survey. So we're out there sort of sharing the information, and the Citizens Committee for Good Schools can will be the ones that advocate for the actual passing. So
February 14th is the day.
Yep.
Yep, bring in the love. That's what we're saying. Bring the love.
Dave.
Thanks for sharing. We've already discussed, we're going to have our first park subcommittee meeting on the 5th of December. I'd appreciate it. As of right now, we don't have any goals, and this is the purpose of this meeting. So if there's anything specific you would like that subcommittee to look into or advocate for, please email me.
Parks Foundation, we are going into our end of year giving campaign. That'll be starting next week, and all funds raised from that will go to our community grants. And the application period for community grants for 2017 will be opening up here shortly and go through January 31. So we'll talk about that too. And hopefully there'll be a really cool county project that we can give some funds to. Something that I've been working on since I arrived at Parks Foundation was taking a closer look at our events and our activities and trying to get them to align a little more closely with our mission, like having events that relate to parks. We're getting a little closer with that with our plans for this next year. We're moving our St. Patrick's Day event to Lukey Center and Marshall Center. So we're actually really excited about that. It's going to be indoors. Instead of at Shorty's.
Okay.
And we're also going to add a Halloween event in the same model for kids. So a Halloween indoor activity fair the Saturday before Halloween, a free event for kids and families. And we're starting to build that now. So we're really looking forward to that. And sort of more closely tailoring our events to kids and families. So with the Shorty's event, that's historically been a Friday night, 21 and over party, and a Saturday kids event. We're actually pulling out the Friday event and just focusing on the kids event on the Saturday and trying to build that and make it even stronger. So we'll be working on that. And and also something that the Parks Foundation hasn't done in a few years is some strategic planning. So starting next month, I'm starting to work with the board on taking a closer look at the Parks Foundation, what it does, where it wants to go, and doing some planning on that end. So we're pretty excited about that, and I'm thrilled to be starting to develop a stronger vision.
Are you bringing in anybody to help you with that?
That is under discussion with the board.
Okay.
Exciting times. Super thanks. All right.
Just thank you for everybody's help and support and passion for parks. It's really nice to have you guys be so caring and passionate about us. Good to see you.
Mutual admiration. We love our staff. All right, I guess that's a wrap. Meeting adjourned.
Thanks, everyone.
More stuff.
More stuff. I need to make a big box.
I've got some more to give you, but I just thought I'd give it to you a little bit at a time.